Okay, tell me about your day.
I did not sleep well last night, okay. So I was up super early. Had a meeting. I had to get into Manhattan super early to get to a coffee shop and save a space because coffee shops in Manhattan are about what you would expect. Mm-hmm. Client was like half hour late, not his fault, fine, like whatever. But that sort of set a ripple effect. Got to my girlfriend's apartment and her internet is, for all intents and purposes, useless today. So that meant having to do a call with a client where I had to dial in, which is always annoying, instead of being able to use your microphone. Then being on the phone with Spectrum, and now they're sending somebody at 4. So it's, and then an hour before the recording started, what I can only describe as the breakup of the century began to happen 4 stories down outside my girlfriend's building. Okay. I thought this was going to
take a much darker turn.
Oh, I mean, it's dark, man. They are, as far as I can tell, still going.
Oh, man.
So hence why, like 3 minutes before we started, I texted you and said, give me a minute, because what I had to do, was take my girlfriend's air conditioner out of her window so I could fully close the window. Because otherwise we were going to have some, guests on the show airing all of their problems.
Now, quick cue. If we do want to kind of tap that guest opportunity, you could just maybe open a window a bit.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, look, if we get, you know, 20 minutes into this and we run out of things, I think that would be great.
Okay, perfect. Great. We'll probably, you know, 20 minutes and we'll be lucky. What's this show people are listening to?
Yeah, so this is episode 131 of Not a Real Job, a podcast where I complain about my difficult life.
Also,
season 2, episode 2.
Thank you.
I see here in red in the show note document. Joel, did I also mention that I am currently tethered to my phone on my laptop and I am FaceTime autoing you on my laptop via iPhone tether? This is the day that I am having. Tell me about your day, Joel.
Should we say hello to the live chat?
Yeah. Yeah, let's. Just everybody,
if
you
want to kind of tell us about their days, maybe we can read. We'll read a few as we go throughout the show here.
I think that's a great idea. It's a good way to engage the fans. You always want to engage the fans. That's the main thing.
Yeah, my day is fine compared to that, I think. It was a crazy day of deadline. Well, a crazy week of deadlines, and you know, as they all seem to come up on Friday. I don't know if that's through my own behavior. It totally is. Or something else, but Friday seems to be an awful busy day.
You know what I love to do? I love to have things that were due on Monday or Tuesday or whatever, and I push them to Friday, and then on Friday I email the client and say, I need until Monday. That's one of my favorite sort of strategies that, you know,
this could continue forever.
Oh yeah. I mean, it does. This is the rest of one's life.
Is avoiding responsibilities. What was your best strategy for avoiding an obligation this week?
You know what? This week, actually, my strategy for avoiding obligations was to not take any on. Or to assign my obligations to other people.
The best offense is a good defense. I think that's...
Yes. That's what they say in sport.
It's as true in sport as it is in lives living.
Quite.
Oh, man. Well, I think, you know, I kind of have a couple discussion topics here, and I wanted to save complaining to later in the show. So why don't we just kind of talk about the positive stuff for a bit?
Please.
The big positive was episode 1 of season 2. I think the response so far has been overwhelmingly positive.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think what's like really amazing about the response that we've gotten is that as of this recording, the episode has not indeed been published.
Well, not so live, I think that, like, quote unquote.
Right. When I think that's what makes the good feedback we've gotten so good. it's that no one's actually heard it. Like, that's distilled. What's kind of amazing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's concentrated quality feedback. The more people who...
So would you say it's homeopathic feedback?
People's ears already have the memory of listening to our show, even if it never touched them, I think.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it touches everyone.
Our show.
I think we know that for sure. Yeah.
Speaking of touching everyone, we promised a diverse panel of guests in episode one of season two. And I'm thrilled to let you kind of announce who that is.
I love that that you've thrown that to me. I am a fan. Yes, and I think you should do it.
Okay. Excellent. So it's less of a yes and
more of a no.
No, because I don't want to.
Yeah. Yeah. An unqualified I don't want to.
I did, and this could either be intentional, it could be unintentional, it could be conscious, it could be subconscious, it could be subliminal, it could be liminal. I did put you in a position where I think the expected joke would have been you just listing names of people who are quote unquote diverse. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure, comedy-wise.
Well, there would have been. Yeah,
it would have been very funny. Now, it would have been very funny. I'm sure you would have pulled it off somehow. But
So Joel, let's talk more about real things.
Is this a segue?
I think so.
Huh.
This is sort of like just me.
Hopped on a self-balancing scooter contraption towards a new conversation.
Yeah, I think that is true.
I felt that bit had life in it still. You know, we've already stepped into the other room, but I still kind of feel like there was room to spread out.
Here's the thing, Joel. Mm-hmm. If you want, I'm mm-hmm. happy to let you sort of die on a hill or a cross of your own making, whatever the expression
might be. We all die on hills, Christopher. That's how the saying goes.
That's just life. Yeah.
The earth is one big hill and we all die on it.
I think the earth is many hills.
Not if you think about it.
Hmm.
A hill is kind of just like a bisected sphere.
Uh-huh.
So the earth is kind of like, you know, it's got a top hill and a bottom hill.
I think it's a left hill and a right hill. So
I'm going to start a war with you over this. Okay. So live chat, we did episode one. Yep. We covered guests. Mm-hmm. We covered next thing I have in the outline here, which is point number 1, 2, 3, 4 in a list of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. So yep. we've made pretty good progress to the show so far. This is where we talk about business.
Yes. Yeah, we do that because I think we're both business boys.
Well, I've become quite a web boy. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Why don't you tell the audience what's going on there?
I updated my website a Woo! Fair bit.
Awesome.
No, Christopher, and thank you for the perfect segue into our sponsor break. This episode is brought to you by Squarespace. Squarespace, get your web.
Don't give them that.
Get your
don't
web done.
Don't give them that. They've got enough of that without our help.
I mean, they have a team of volunteer podcasts spreading the good word. I listen.
It's amazing. It's the social movement of the century.
Absolutely. It's grass. It's movement. Grass fucking roots.
Yes. Oh my goodness. If the grass is AstroTurf.
Anyway. I am hitching my ride to that Squarespace. that didn't make any sense. I made a bunch of website updates using the extremely intuitive tools of Squarespace. And I added color. I added color to our internet website, which was a big deal for me since it had been black and white and gray for kind of 9 months.
Now I'm going to see if I can open this while also tethering and speaking to you via my tether.
Well, I can tell you that your audio sounds terrible to my ears. So
okay.
I'm sure the internet's going to be fine.
Great. Cool. We're doing great.
Yeah.
Your website looks very good, Joel. Now, I see the colors that you've chosen here are not the colors that you had chosen when we last spoke.
No, I assume these ones are harder for you to see. I don't know.
No, these are about the same.
Okay. Yeah, they're different. I've been trying all kinds of things.
Oh, no, big I lost one, you, Joel.
Oh no, are you gone? Okay, I'm gonna have to vamp for a bit. It sounds like since I think we lost Christopher.
No, I was there. So it turns out, and we should keep this all in because this is high quality content.
Is this good? Is this the show?
This is it. It turns out if you change your microphone input on FaceTime, it may randomly also change your output.
That's a feature.
That is bravery.
Only Apple.
So Joel, here's the thing. I want to talk about your website a little bit because you did sort of reach out to me and you were asking some things. I think what's cool about your website and what I like about the changes that you made is like, yeah, you did add color, but I think by and large, like what the big changes were actually like structural. Like your website is like really like relatively similar to what was there before, but I think the way that you redid the navigation, I think that's really good. I think the addition, I think this is new since we last spoke. I think the addition of the marketing master plan page is excellent. And I think the way that that page is laid out is really excellent. And I think it's sort of a good example of the stuff that's important isn't always like necessarily visual stuff, or at least not like design stuff. Like you might think like fonts and colors, although that certainly helps. But I think what makes your website effective is the content that's on there and the way that that content is accessed.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate that. It looks like chat wants to know what website we're talking about. So you can just go to www.familyknife.com.
Yeah. That's for you, chat.
Yeah, totally. So I jest a little bit in talking about, yeah, the color being, the color was obviously a part of it, but what,
yeah, and certainly like not a small part. I don't want to minimize it, but I think it's sort of a reminder that the most important parts, I mean, I guess I am minimizing it. The content is what matters. The content is the main thing. And like fact that you run a successful marketing consultancy, like on a Squarespace website, like that's great. Like that's proof, I think, that it's the content that's most important. Like, and it can be very easy to get bogged down in bike shedding about CMSs and all this kind of stuff. And it's really just like, get something online that says stuff about your business and has contact information.
Yeah.
That's all you got to do.
And update it whenever it needs updating, which is whenever you think it could be a little bit better. I mean, that's it. Like the stuff that I've just been able to do over the last, you know, couple days when I've gotten a few minutes is the kind of thing that in a large organization, it takes weeks. You know, I've been changing words on this website every day. I'm sure, you know, archive.org, if it's got my site indexed yet, is going to have a ton of different instances. If anyone's got me on Crayon or something, monitoring the site, there's so many different revisions and changes and minor stuff. And what I'm proud of in that, I think that in every revision and iteration, what you will notice is an increase in focus. The website has gotten larger in that there's more content, more words, and more pages than the very first version. But the very first version of the website, I didn't know who my customers were yet. You know, and at that point, I was still very much at the phase where my sole ambition for the first year of business, as we talked about last episode, was to pay my own bills, my half of the house expenses and our dog's expenses for a year and just chill on that. The company grew, faster than I expected and larger than I expected. And in that time, I got a much better picture of what the value is. You know, our clients tended to start having a lot of things in common. We started realizing, you know, as we always have, the marketing that we do, how we do pitches, how we win business is describing our marketing position to our customers. And they either realize that we're for them or we're not. So the website has just been taking that language, what we tell people when we sit down and meet with them or email them or get them on the phone. And I've just written that on the website. The website copy now is going to be what we use in any of our written proposals and documents, because it's the newest, most updated information. The other big thing is that we added a product page. So as you were saying, we have the marketing master plan. We're calling that our product now. We do ad hoc consulting. We do hourly work like everyone else. It's not the kind of thing that we want to do the most of. We'd much rather, and we think we're much more valuable to our clients if we set them up with the tools and abilities to do more themselves. So that's the main product that we're starting to sell. So we kind of wrote down more explicitly what that is, what the... And that's, again, based on this is what our customers have said they've wanted from us. This is, again, when we describe to our customers the type of work we do, this is what animates them. So,
and something that I've got the page open here, and this is new even since, you know, 2 or 3 days ago, whenever I last looked at this, is that you have pricing on here.
Sure do.
Now, for a consultancy like yours is, publishing pricing is pretty much non-existent. Sometimes a consultancy will have, I guess, what we could call like a tripwire product and like, you know, a few hundred dollars or maybe in the low thousands as a way to just sort of get you in the door and then sell you on the longer stuff. But what you're pricing here now, this is as of late January 2018, you know, listeners 100 years in the future when they're listening at the podcast museum, they, you know, obviously prices will have changed. Yeah. But you're selling your lowest price here is $6,500. Mm-hmm. The middle tier is $12,000, and then the high tier is starting at $20,000. Mm-hmm. So that's not necessarily a trigger loaded sort of easy purchase. That's a pretty significant amount or I'm guessing for your target market. Yeah. What was the thinking behind putting that pricing and putting your stamp in that and putting that on your website?
Yeah, there are two major reasons. I guess really the big thing is there are a lot of reasons not to, and none of them when I really puzzled them out seemed like good reasons. They all seemed like ways to keep being afraid of saying what we cost, which I think every consultant, every agency, or most of them do, is that they do have this fear of telling the client what this is going to cost because the client might think that that's way too much, or worse, the client thinks that's low and you realize, oh my God, I could have made so much more money. You know, it's this constant fear of if we say the number, you know, that it's honestly, I think a lot of it comes from a very bad negotiating rule that a lot of people learned, that the person who says the number first loses. It's something a lot of dads say, I find, but it's not true. You know, the person who says their number first, can win, just like their partner in the relationship can win. You set your price at what your services cost and based on the number, and this is point number two. So number one was there's no good reason not to. Number two is, the very good reason to have it there is that we're not looking to get a large volume of extra clients. We don't want to grow our business, to a bunch of extra staff anytime soon. We don't want a lot of hourly work and we don't want a lot of small projects. What we're looking for good projects we can dig into and spend a decent amount of time on. And we have enough clients and customers now to sustain us. So as we grow our customer base, we want them to be customers that need us, customers that read, honestly, customers that read this page and get to the pricing and think, sure, whatever, you know, that this is what we need. If the decision is coming down to pricing, I'd say just like every product, something's gone wrong somewhere earlier.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's how I feel. Yeah. Give me your thoughts. What are your thoughts on it? Why do you think so many people don't do it?
I mean, I think you kind of hit the nail on the head. I think I think there is sort of this mindset that, and it's certainly a mindset that I have I don't publish any pricing on our website. And I think it's because I want to get on the phone. I want to understand the business. Mm-hmm. And I don't, and for better or worse, and I think there are good reasons and bad reasons to do this, but I don't want to charge the same amount to a business making $1 million a year versus a business making $20 million a year. Mm-hmm. And you know, there's probably an ethical quandary there that somebody has dug into about, you know, whether that's good or bad. But, I think for most consultants, having that price flexibility, is important. Now that said, I also completely see the downside to that, which I think you also mentioned, which is that, that you might, you know, you need to avoid the impulse to put your price below what it actually costs you or to a point where you're not getting the margin that you really need to support it. And so what I do like about this is that it gives you a floor at least. Yeah. And maybe along the way, if you find that you're working with the $20 million enterprise or whatever, you can find value adds that are genuine and that genuinely help them, but help you, you know, get more value for that particular company.
Yeah.
I think also for me personally, the nature of our work is that we don't really have a package that we can really provide mm-hmm. all of, you know, the range of clients that we have. We're getting to that point. We're starting to do paid strategy as sort of a mandatory thing before we start a consulting project or a development build, to be, you know, more specific. And that's probably something that in the long term we can come up with a specific price for. But for now, it's so new. We're starting two of them on Monday for the first time. You know, I couldn't tell you what it would cost to deliver those. You know, check in a month and maybe I'll know.
Well, exactly. And kind of what you're saying on everything being different depending on the client, because the not just on what the client can afford, of course, but you know, and what the project is going to require. And that's why you mentioned we have our kind of our most expensive tier is the starting at 20,000. That's an example of, you know, we have no idea what the project might entail in this case. That's for, you know, we're doing a full rebrand. You're launching a brand new project or product. And you want to have a huge media campaign. That's where we're saying, okay, if we're doing something, that's going to be not just a strategy, not just a plan of tactics, but we're also building everything, doing the implementation, that this is the floor for that. But then that's where scoping is required. And I think just for most of your business, it starts in that kind of area where it's, okay, we need to really sit down and talk about requirements, whereas we can do quite a bit of work, you know, with standard packages, because the marketing principles are largely the same. It's tailoring them to the client. That's the work.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that makes perfect sense. And I'm going to be very interested, and I hope you'll share with us, you know, over the next few months here, how this works for you. I'll be very interested to hear if people try to negotiate with you on the price or mm-hmm. if they accept mm-hmm. it. I'll be interested to hear if certain industries or certain markets seem to gravitate toward this particular plan. I'm just all around. I think it's an interesting, you know, I'll call it an experiment, to, you know, to see how this impacts, your lead gathering and your bottom line.
One of the things that we want to avoid as well, because we've had this happen before, we're by no means the cheapest option in let's say the market. We're the cheapest option and the most expensive option at the same time in our particular subcategory in this market, which is a full consultancy that focuses on doing more in-house. It's not a super common position here, but you know, for general consultants, for marketing advice, sure, we're probably on the high side of average. What really sucked was telling clients that they couldn't afford us. Obviously, that's not the language you use. And it sucked in the exact same way that we've all felt. If you're in a store or you're on a website and you have to ask what the price is and they come back and it's higher than you expected, it's higher than your budget, and you get that feeling of, now I just kind of feel shitty. Like, yeah, it sucks to ask how much something is and then be presented with an answer that's outside of your expectations, especially, you know, the worst case is when you're in person with that person. You've got to pretend like, oh, well, that's nothing. Of course, I'll have to think on it and you'll never see me again. But yeah, so a lot of that was just avoiding that as well. So people kind of know up front what they're getting. And obviously, we think a higher quality of work comes with that. But just remove that, those kind of painful conversations.
Yeah. And I think to sort of go back to something that you'd mentioned before, which is that I think something like this is a very deliberate step toward building a smaller company.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
And I don't know if you saw, and we'll get this in the show notes, the Paul Jarvis article from, I think, last week or early this week. Yeah, so it's basically his sort of screed on capitalism and how the idea of capitalism is sort of this unfettered growth fueled by the markets and, mm-hmm. and growth for growth's sake, and how that sort of is the engine of the capitalist machine. And it's not, you know, I don't want to make it sound like some kind of manifesto or rant or something like that, but it's sort of a very well put article and sort of philosophy on paper, I guess, where he says, you know, I've sort of made the deliberate choice not to build something that big. And I think this is similar to what you'll see from 37 Signals or Basecamp now. And I think hopefully becomes a bigger movement of people saying, yeah, you know what, I've consciously chosen what sort of the lifestyle is that I want to have and what the size, you know, company is required to fulfill that lifestyle, and not sort of going for, you know, building it as big as you can and taking on venture capital or investments and being a little bit more mindful and more aware of like, hey, like you can actually build something that leaves you very happy and hopefully relatively low stress and, mm-hmm. And, you know, can sustain your life without having 100 people on staff or whatever.
You're absolutely right. You know, Lee and I were talking about this, you know, we're teetering on the edge of comfort. We don't need, we don't need anything more. We don't want much more, but the drive to build something is so strong. It still requires thought and effort every day to avoid building a large company or taking the steps with that in mind. I had coffee yesterday with a friend and mentor. And he was talking about this. He has recently tried to downsize his company. He had started this nice little business. It was just him. Then it was one partner. And a couple years ago, when we first started talking about it, he was so happy. Everything was going great. Flash forward to yesterday, and he is just kind of ending the cycle of trying to downsize the company and get back to where he was, because he had suddenly started growing a company larger than he wanted. We discussed why we think that is. I think personally, I think a lot of it comes down to, I'll use the word ego, but I mean it in the sense of, you know, that part of your brain that is always angling for status knows that building a company of size is the only public evidence you have of success. And I think that you can't tell people how much you make. That's something no one's allowed to say. So everyone has to kind of flash their status in other ways. And I think for entrepreneurs, that's the size of the business they create. You know, it's the car that they buy 6 months after starting their new business, so everyone can see that, you know, look, everything's fine. And then it's the company that they grow as fast as they can, so again, everyone can see that they're big and successful, even if no one cared and they didn't want that.
Yeah, and I think it's really like, I think what you said at the end there, it's like they maybe really didn't want that. I think it's really uncommon for entrepreneurs or prospective entrepreneurs to sit down and think, like quite literally, like what do I want? What are my goals in life? And it doesn't have to be a rigid process, but like, I think sort of working backwards from like, okay, I want these things. I want, you know, these, you know, physical things, but I also like, these are the, you know, this is the type of lifestyle that I want to have. What does it take to support that? And then working mm-hmm. backwards and figuring out, you know, in building a business, what does it take? I think, you know, one of my favorite podcasts, the Tropical MBA podcast, also disclosure, a client, but their sort of tagline is, or one of their taglines is that they believe that business is the best way to build a lifestyle that you control. And I think that's mm-hmm. that's really a valuable insight. And mm-hmm. for me, as I've been doing a lot with goal setting, which I think we talked a little bit about last week, I've been sort of thinking about my business as kind of an engine to power a certain lifestyle that I want, and trying to figure out, you know, okay, if that's going to be the case, how big does the engine need to be to drive the car? And I think the answer for me is probably a little bit bigger than what you want. And that's okay. Because also, you know, there are trade-offs to that, right? Mm-hmm. Like, wanting kind of a lifestyle where I can commit less time to the business. And that means that it needs people to sort of run things when I'm not available to run them. So, but I think what's important is that you sit down and actually think through that for yourself and work yeah. backwards and say, what does it take to actually get what I want? Because I think a lot of people don't do that. Like you said, I think they charge forward. They go with growth because that's kind of what happens. You need growth to build a business, and then it can become addictive over time.
Yeah. I feel like we've talked about this before. I don't know if it was ever on a podcast, but really interrogating oneself about what you actually want and what actually makes you happy is there's little time better spent than that. I think we all do things that we think would make us happy based on what we think other people think would be impressive. And it's almost never what we want. You know, what I think what so many of us want, you know, the third of the population that shares kind of our personality profile, we just want a life free of obligation. You know?
Yeah. No, I mean, and that's 100%
all I'm searching for.
Yeah. And that's something, you know, in
building a giant company is the worst way to do that.
I don't know.
For me. Sure.
Yeah. And I think that's part of it too. It's like, you know, it is figuring out, you know, what is the engine? How big does it need to yeah. be? How does it need to work? I would say, you know, I'm trying to build mm-hmm. an autonomous car in a way. And so with that kind of mindset, that is going to have a big impact in every aspect of the business, how big I grow it and how many clients I take on, but also who I'm hiring and yeah. what roles I'm hiring for. If you want to be a micromanager, it's very easy to hire people who facilitate micromanagement. Like that's mm-hmm. very easy to do. If you want to hire people who can take more control and make decisions without you, you know, that's possible as well. You just have to kind of understand that and be intentional with your decision making.
I think that sounds good. I think on that note, we should shift into our next segment. Let's play the segment music, which is, this is the point where we talk about Apple. How's your Apple?
My Apple's fine.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've had no new issues.
Yeah. Nothing has changed.
Nothing's gotten any better. But no, cool. nothing's gotten any worse.
So should we talk about gear then?
Do you care at all about the HomePod apparently sucking?
No.
I guess it doesn't suck. It sounds great, but it does less than all the other smart speakers. But, you know, I guess...
But we all knew that.
We all knew that, and it's fine. It's the single sign-on thing, because the same thing that bothers me with the Apple TV is that, you know, our Apple TV in the living room is very much a shared device, but everything on it is my Apple ID, you know, which,
yeah.
which is weird, but...
Yeah, I mean, as far as I know, a problem in some way across all of the assistants. That's a problem with Alexa, with Spotify accounts. It drives me nuts. I don't know about Google Home. I can't speak to that. But yeah, I think that's a big problem that will need to be solved by all the big players in the mm-hmm. space.
The good news for me is that mm-hmm. It's no longer really in a point in my life where I'm going to spontaneously drop $1,000 on a speaker. So
there you go.
I'm not going to have this thing, and that's going to be fine.
Good.
It's pretty amazing how easy that was. We didn't talk business. Do you want to talk about you becoming like a sales boy, or is that for another show?
I think it is. I'm on a timeline here because now I've got the lovely cable internet folks coming to look at this whole situation. So I've got a limited time frame.
Let's try. They could be on the show if we stall a bit.
I hope they aren't.
I'm buying for time here so we can get Spectrum on the line and work this out in front of the audience. What's the chat saying? They want us to stall.
I don't know. The chat here is saying gear picks. So dang. I'm just going to dive right into that.
Okay. I guess New York chat wins.
New York chat wins. Number one city. Awesome. So this is the part of the show. We recommend gear or other physical real world belongings that you can purchase with actual currency on Amazon.com. And if you buy through the links in the show notes, we get a little percentage of that. And you get to enjoy some cool stuff. So Joel, do you have something you want to share?
Yeah, let's see here. You'd think I'd prepare. Did I do my you know what? No, we'll save that for another show. I'm gonna do books. It's always books. These ones just arrived today, so I haven't had a chance to read them yet. But I picked up The Will to Change, Men, Masculinity, and Love by Bell Hooks. This was on the recommendation of... What? Give me one second. The guy on YouTube who does YouTube videos about toxic masculinity in entertainment. This is Jonathan McIntosh, right? 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 Maybe. This is all good. Let's keep this in. Let's keep this in. It's pop culture detective. Anyway, it's pop culture detective. I really liked one of his videos about Star Wars, The Case Against the Jedi. And it was about it was a really interesting dive into the philosophy of the Jedi that's been presented to us across, especially the prequels. And kind of like what a terrible role model for men they are. And he, in that video, recommends The Will to Change by Bell Hooks. So I'm going to give that a read because, you know, men, masculinity, and love are good topics worth looking into.
There you go.
That's what I say. I also ordered the volume one of the Eleanor Roosevelt biography. By Blanche Cook. So
awesome.
Those will both be in the show notes.
Okay, we have to really pause here. I've got a client calling. One second.
So I have to decide whether I'm going to vamp here or not. So Chris had a client call. I think I'm going to keep going. So this is all part of these two books, trying to widen my reading sphere. I've always been of the opinion, I think, in marketing, business in general, you kind of succeed based on knowing more, is a pretty good general rule. And I think in marketing, especially when it comes to words and language and culture, having as wide an interest base, and kind of enjoyment base as possible is important. So, just trying to branch out, obviously want to learn more about, different people, want to learn more about, you know, the history of masculinity, the shift into the toxic masculinity we've seen, especially on the internet. And then, of course, how we can move beyond it and make improvements. And Eleanor Roosevelt's biography was recommended by Ryan Holiday, which I guess he's a problematic figure himself. So way to undercut everything you just said. But anyway, because she is, of course, an incredible figure. And known as, according to the Washington Post, America's greatest first lady, who I know almost nothing about. So I thought that would be a good read. So we're going to check that out. I'm going to assume Christopher was going to recommend probably something. It was definitely going to be a book, but it was
going
to be a
bet. Joel, have you been going this whole time?
Have you? Have you not been listening?
No.
I've been giving you opportunities to defend yourself. I assumed you had nothing to say.
I'm sorry. This is really just a crazy, crazy day. It's legal stuff.
It's okay. It's all right.
Okay. Back into it. I'm just going to dive into my, I'm going to dive into, awesome. All right. So I've got a recommendation as well. This is by Alan Weiss. This is a classic that I'm just getting around to reading and I'm really, really into it. It's Million Dollar Consulting, The Professional's Guide to Growing a Practice, fifth edition. This is just one of those books that I'd heard about for so long. I think I had an ebook copy of it and just hadn't bothered reading. Recently got a paperback copy and the highlighter has been very busy. It has very few of the trappings of a typical business book. It's very low on, you know, capital letter terminology with trademark symbols. And, you know, it's very much tactical and no BS.
Yeah. You wouldn't know by the title that it's actually a good, smart book.
Yeah. Yeah. The title is not great. But the content, like I've been reading a lot of business books recently and most of them are just utter like filler text and they're just bad and not enjoyable reads. You really have to kind of hunt for the good stuff. This is a book where like within the first five pages, I was like just whoaing, you know, left and right. Like I genuinely, like this is one of the best books that I've read in a while on this subject. So I'd really recommend giving that a read.
Excellent. I recommend that as well. That was lent to me by a friend of mine, Joel Burke. And I, within like 15, 20 pages, I was like, no, I just got to buy my own copy so I can mark this up. So
yeah,
it's a good book.
It's really good. Awesome. All right, folks, that's going to do it for us. But first, where can you find us? We're all over. We're at notarealjob.com. The show notes are all there. The links to the Amazon gear that we love is all there. Of course, you can find us on Twitter at NargeCast. And we're also on Twitter as well, individually at Chris Van Patten, at Joel Kelly. Follow us. Please rate us, review us on iTunes, notarealjob.com/iTunes. We really appreciate it. You can also find contact forms at the notarealjob.com website. So you can send in a question. You can contact us there. We put the live chat there for the live stream. Thanks everyone for sharing in the live chat. Mm-hmm. We really appreciate it. Mm-hmm. And I think that does it.
That's it. That's everyone. This is a great show. As Chris said, we haven't even heard episode one yet ourselves. So we have
episode
no idea.
Episode 130.
Sorry. Yeah. S1E 130, S2E 1. So we don't know if this is terrible, if the show is any better than it was before, if it's gotten markedly worse. It's been a while since we've done this. So, you know, if you want to say something, tweet at Chris.
Yeah. I'll listen. I'll respond.
Yeah. I don't really have a lot of time for the fans. To be honest, these days it's been pretty hectic. So just let Chris know how it's going.
Yeah. And my life has been a breeze. So I think
he's got nothing going on.
Yeah, there you go. All right, folks, that'll be it. We'll see you next week.
All right, bye, everyone. I love you all. Not a Real Job is sponsored by Van Patten Media.
And The Family Knife.
Van Patten Media builds websites and web applications for businesses who care about intuitive and effective user experiences. Its sister agency, Tomodomo, does the same, with a focus on online communities and social applications.
And if you want to do more marketing in-house but need the tools, strategies, or support to do it, The Family Knife is the partner you need to build your marketing capabilities and grow your business.
You can find Van Patten Media at vanpattenmedia.com.
And you can find The Family Knife at familyknife.com.
For more information on being a sponsor of Not a Real Job, visit notarealjob.com/sponsorships.